Imagine buying like a state-of-the-art self-driving car, right?
Yeah.
But instead of just sitting back and telling it your destination, you have to manually program every single left turn, every right turn, and like every brake, tap into the computer before you even leave the driveway.
Which completely defeats the entire purpose of the technology.
Exactly. You just wouldn't do it. Yet, according to a massive new piece of research, that is exactly how modern businesses are treating artificial intelligence. Welcome to today's deep dive.
Yeah, it really is a watershed moment for how we think about productivity, honestly.
It is. We are looking at a fundamental shift in how entire businesses are structured, moving away from micromanaging steps and towards designing dynamic specifications.
Right. It's a complete tearing up of the traditional corporate playbook.
It really is. And to guide us through this transition, we've got a stack of sources, primarily a comprehensive 2026 working paper. It's titled AEM Agentic Enterprise Operating Model.
Written by Michael White and Trevor Moore from IGX Solutions.
Yeah, that's the one. So our mission today is to unpack how agentic AI is forcing us to abandon rigid processes for, well, something called specification-centric design. And we want to help you figure out exactly what this means for your own work.
Because the catalyst here isn't just some new management fad cooked up in a seminar, you
Yeah.
know, it's the arrival of agentic AI.
Systems that don't just compute, but actually reason. So, okay, let's unpack this. If we're tearing up the rulebook today, it helps to realize that the rulebook we're tearing up is actually like over a century old.
Yeah, it's older than anyone working today.
Right. We are literally running companies on an assumption made in 1911. Can you set that historical baseline for us?
I can, yeah. And it's a fascinating look at how we got trapped in this current way of working. So if you look back over the last century, organizations have relied on increasingly complex abstractions to get work done.
Like breaking things down into smaller pieces.
Exactly. So in 1911, Frederick Taylor gave us scientific management. He broke work down into the abstraction of tasks.
Oh, like the guy standing on a factory floor with a stopwatch.
That's the exact image, yeah.
Yeah.
Optimizing the literal physical movements of a worker shoveling coal. The goal was pure mechanical efficiency.
Wow.
But then, as companies grew way too large for stopwatches, Henri Fayol introduced functions. So grouping those individual tasks into massive departments.
Like HR, finance, or marketing, which is, I mean, that's still the underlying architecture of almost every org chart today. You sit in marketing, I sit in finance.
Yes, and that worked fine for a while. But by the 1990s, the corporate world realized that actual value doesn't sit inside a single department.
Right, it flows across them.
Exactly. Work flows across the departments. And that realization gave us business process management, or BPM. The abstraction became the process.
End-to-end value chains drawn out in those like massive, complicated flow
Oh, yeah, swim lanes everywhere.
Wow.
But here's the critical thing to understand about all of this. From Taylor's physical tasks in 1911 to the digital swim lane processes of the 1990s, every single one of these models shares one massive, unquestioned assumption.
That you have to figure out the how before you can actually do the work.
Precisely. The historical assumption is that execution must be defined before work occurs. You have to write the manual, or draw the flow chart, or code the software logic line by line.
You prescribe the exact steps.
Right. And this made perfect sense when the actors doing the work were humans who needed strict guidance or traditional software systems that required explicit, you know, step-by-step programming.
Because if you didn't tell a 1990s SQL database exactly what to do, it would literally just sit there on the server. It couldn't figure anything out on its own.
Exactly. But the emergence of AI that can reason, plan, and adapt, it completely shatters that assumption. And the paper identifies three major problems with trying to force this new AI into our old historical models.
Right, the three convergent problems. Let's walk through those. What's the first one?
So the first problem is that our current process disciplines are deeply fragmented. To put it simply, large enterprises today usually map, mine, and automate their processes in complete isolation.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so you have business analysts drawing sticky note flow charts to map how things should work. Then you have data scientists using process mining software to read server logs and figure out how things are actually working.
And those two rarely match up, I bet.
Never. And then finally, you have IT departments writing code to automate tiny little pieces of that process.
So the mappers, the miners, and the automators are all using different tools, speaking different languages, and literally looking at different versions of reality.
Right. And the result of that fragmentation is that organizations have multiple disconnected representations of execution. but they have no unified representation of their actual intent.
Oh.
They have tons of process artifacts like charts and code, but no real intelligence about why the work is being done in the first place.
Which feels like a huge miss.
It is, and that leads to the second problem. Because we only know how to think in terms of step-by-step processes, we are wrongly treating agentic AI as just advanced automation.
We're taking these reasoning agents and trying to shoehorn them into rigid legacy flowcharts.
Exactly.
Wait, let me push back here for a second. Let me play devil's advocate.
Sure.
If I hand an AI a standard operating procedure, like handling a customer complaint, isn't it really just a super fast intern clicking through the screens?
Okay.
I mean, why does this require a whole new framework? Advanced automation sounds exactly like what it is.
What's fascinating here is the fundamental difference in cognitive capability. Unlike traditional software bots, or even early large language models, an agentic system doesn't just execute a blind set of instructions.
Okay.
It evaluates context, it navigates constraints, it looks at alternatives, and determines its own execution path.
Oh, I see.
Think about a traditional software bot. If you give it an SOP to scrape data from a vendor's website, and that vendor changes the layout of their web page by moving one button like 2 inches to the left.
It breaks. The whole process fails. It just throws an error code, stops working, and someone in IT gets a pager alert.
Right. That is the brittle nature of traditional process. But if you give an agentic AI a rigid SOP, you aren't just risking a breakdown. You are actually limiting its potential.
Because it could figure it out otherwise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If a variable changes, like that website button moving, the agent is entirely capable of reasoning its way around the obstacle to achieve the goal. It can literally look at the new page, find the new button, and proceed.
But if your hard-coded process dictates it must click the exact coordinates of step 3 before step 4, you've taken this highly adaptable intelligence and made your organization brittle.
It's forced to fail because the rules were too rigid, even though the intelligence itself knew how to succeed.
Wow. Which leads perfectly into the third problem identified in the paper. Dynamic execution completely breaks process-centric design.
Right. Mapping out a step-by-step flowchart for an intelligence that can figure out the best route on the fly is just a colossal waste of time and resources. It is actively harmful to efficiency.
Because the moment the environment changes, your flowchart is obsolete, but the agent's reasoning is still valid. But, I mean, that leaves us staring into a pretty massive void. If we agree that writing rigid processes is obsolete, we can't just hire a bunch of AI agents, give them zero instructions, and, like, hope for the best. What exactly do we give them instead?
That void is exactly what the ADM framework is designed to fill. And the answer requires a conceptual leap from process-centric design to specification-centric design.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the paper introduces a concept called DAWN. D-A-W-N, which stands for Dynamic Agentic Workflow Notation.
Yes.
And the whole premise is figuring out the minimum amount of information you need to give an AI for it to operate autonomously and safely. The core construct of DAWN is something they simply call the box.
The box is the new fundamental unit of organizational design. Instead of drawing a sequence of steps, you design a multidimensional boundary for the agent to operate within.
Okay.
And the box consists of exactly 5 dimensions.
Let's hear them.
The first is intent. Why does this activity exist? What is the overarching purpose? The intent remains stable even if the execution changes wildly from day to day.
So, like, if we are dealing with a customer return, the intent is to resolve the customer's issue fairly while protecting the company's revenue.
Perfect example.
Okay, what is the second dimension?
The second is inputs. So what data, resources, context, or knowledge does the agent have access to? Does it have API access to the inventory system? Can it read the customer's purchase history?
The inputs define the realm of possibility.
Right. Then the third dimension is outputs. What actually constitutes success? Are we looking for a decision, a generated legal document, or, you know, just a changed database state?
Okay, so we have the purpose, the tools, and the definition of a successful outcome. The fourth dimension seems like the most important one for keeping the company out of trouble. Constraints.
Oh, absolutely vital. Constraints are the hard boundaries. These encompass laws, ethical guidelines, budget limits, risk tolerances.
It tells the agent what is absolutely impermissible.
Regardless of how badly it wants to achieve the intent. For example, a constraint might be, do not process a refund over $500 without human approval. Or, do not violate the California Consumer Privacy Act.
Okay, we have the tools, the goal, and the boundaries. But if something goes horribly wrong inside those boundaries, or if a customer threatens a lawsuit, someone has to take the blame, right? Is there a mechanism for that?
That is the fifth and final dimension, governance. Governance defines accountability and authority. Who approves what? What are the escalation procedures?
So if an edge case arises that the AI cannot confidently handle, it knows who is responsible for stepping in.
Exactly. These five dimensions, intent, inputs, outputs, constraints, and governance, they create a secure operational boundary. They create the box.
You know, looking at that list, the most radical part isn't what's included in the box. It's what they deliberately left out.
The execution.
Yeah. There is zero mention of execution. There are no steps. There is no how.
That is the entire paradigm shift of the paper. In a process-centric model, execution is the primary thing you spend your time designing. In a specification-centric model, execution is deliberately omitted.
It's like the difference between buying a paint-by-numbers kit and commissioning a master artist.
Oh, I like that.
With a paint-by-numbers kit, you define every single brush stroke, dictating exactly which color goes into which tiny shape. That is traditional process design. You are micromanaging the execution.
Right.
But with the master artist, you give them the canvas and the paint. Those are your inputs. You give them a budget and a deadline. Those are constraints. You tell them the theme of the gallery, the intent. And you say, make me a masterpiece, the output.
And you don't stand over their shoulder telling them how to mix the cadmium red.
Exactly. The box gives them the parameters to be brilliant on their own.
I love that analogy because it perfectly illustrates what the paper calls governed emergence. Because you haven't prescribed the execution emerges dynamically as a consequence of the specification.
It figures it out in real time.
Yes. The AI evaluates the inputs in real time, understands the intent, respects the constraints, and generates the best possible execution path for that specific moment.
So if a supplier goes bankrupt or a new regulation drops overnight, you don't have to rewrite a massive SOP.
No, the agent simply alters its execution path to stay inside the box.
It provides massive adaptability without sacrificing control. But, let me pause you there, because giving an AI the freedom to determine its own how within a box triggers a massive red flag for anyone who has ever managed a team or dealt with compliance.
Oh, absolutely. It's scary.
Right. If we aren't controlling the execution steps, how do we guarantee the AI doesn't just, you know, hallucinate a bizarre strategy that ruins the brand or breaks the law?
That is the central anxiety of transitioning to an agentic enterprise. And this paper addresses this head on with a concept called human sovereignty.
Okay.
Now, it is crucial to understand that human sovereignty is fundamentally different from traditional human-in-the-loop oversight.
Human-in-the-loop being like when my email software drafts a reply and I have to manually click approve before it actually sends.
Exactly. And that manual approval works fine when you have one human working alongside one AI.
Yeah.
But think about the scale of a future enterprise.
Thousands of agents.
Thousands of agentic actors making millions of micro decisions every single day. Mm. If you require continuous human review of every single action, humans become the ultimate bottleneck.
The entire system would just grind to a halt.
Yeah.
Governance cannot depend on continuous operational oversight.
It can't.
So what is human sovereignty then, if it isn't me manually checking the AI's homework?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the paper uses a brilliant political analogy to explain it. Think about how a modern democracy functions.
Okay.
A government exercises authority. It passes laws, it collects taxes, it builds infrastructure. But the government doesn't actually own that power. The power is derived from the citizens. The citizens hold the sovereignty.
The citizens delegate authority to the government to execute the daily work, but they can revoke that authority if the boundaries are crossed.
Yes. AUM applies this exact constitutional principle to enterprise AI. Agentic actors exercise delegated authority. They make decisions, spend budgets, execute workflows. But human beings retain ultimate sovereignty over the enterprise.
Humans determine the purpose.
Humans determine the purpose, set the constraints, design the governance structures, and most importantly, humans hold ultimate accountability. The AI has autonomy, but it only exists within the strict boundaries of human sovereignty.
So what does this all mean for a CEO today? Are they essentially signing a constitutional charter for their AI workforce? Like, are we moving from corporate managers to corporate lawmakers?
In a very real sense, yes. Yep. And the paper points to some current stakes to illustrate why this is mandatory, not optional. Mm-hmm. They point to the 2026 EU AI Act. Now, whether you agree with the heavy regulatory approach of the European Union or not, and we're just impartially reporting on the paper's analysis here, their point is that this legislation places strict legal obligations on organizations using high-risk systems.
Makes sense.
If a company cannot mathematically prove that it has human accountability and governed boundaries for its autonomous systems, it faces massive legal exposure. You can't just stand before a regulator and say, well, we don't know why it happened, the AI decided to do it.
That defense is definitely not going to hold up in court.
It certainly won't. The paper also brings in a powerful strategic warning from Microsoft's Satya Nadella. He warned that organizations must own their own institutional learning loops.
Let's define that term for a second, because institutional learning loops sounds a bit like, you know, buzzword soup. What does he actually mean by that?
When Nadella talks about institutional learning loops, he basically means a company's internal memory and specialized expertise. If a company just rents a massive, off-the-shelf, external frontier model, like a generic ChatGPT from a third-party tech giant, and lets that model do all its work, the AI provider's model gets smarter from all that data.
But the actual company learns nothing.
Exactly. They are hollowing out their own organization. Human sovereignty dictates that the authority over your knowledge, your decisions, and your governance must remain anchored inside your own proprietary systems, even as you delegate execution.
That is profound. It's not just about operational efficiency. It's about not accidentally outsourcing your company's entire brain to a third-party AI provider.
Exactly.
Autonomy is not the absence of governance. Autonomy is the result of governance. You can only let the AI run at warp speed if you have built a really strong human sovereign box for it to run inside.
And that brings up the operational reality. We have the Constitution established with human sovereignty. We have the laws of the land built with the box. But who exactly is doing the work?
Right, because if we aren't all just humans sitting in cubicles passing spreadsheets back and forth, the org chart is going to look completely alien. How does the paper populate this new enterprise?
The paper introduces organizational representation theory, or ORT, which outlines three distinct classes of actors. First, obviously, are human actors. We aren't going anywhere.
Thank goodness.
Humans focus on judgment, empathy, moral reasoning, strategy, and carrying the ultimate accountability. Second, we have the agentic actors. These are the autonomous systems operating at speed and scale, reasoning through data, and executing dynamic workflows entirely within their boxes.
Okay, but the third category is the one that sounds a bit sci-fi, even though it's starting to happen right now. Hybrid actors.
Yes. The hybrid actor is a tightly integrated human-agent partnership that operates as a single coordinated unit on the organizational chart.
Explain the mechanism there. How does that actually work in an enterprise system? Do they, like, share a login?
Mechanically, yes. The enterprise software recognizes the pair as one entity. Think of a senior financial analyst partnered with a predictive modeling agent. They share a unified budget approval limit. They share a single output quota.
Wow.
If the pair produces a report, the organization doesn't parse out which paragraphs the human wrote and which data the agent pulled. The hybrid node is evaluated as a single point of productivity and liability.
That makes incredible sense for tracking productivity. But it raises a huge logistical question.
What's that?
Well, in a traditional company, authority flows down the human hierarchy, right? Yeah. The board delegates to the CEO, who delegates to the VP, who delegates to the manager.
Right.
How on earth does a purely agentic actor get its authority? Where does a piece of software fit in a hierarchy of human accountability?
That is solved by what the authors call organizational inheritance theory. It argues that AI agents do not generate their own authority. They inherit it from their parent organizational context.
Let me make sure I'm visualizing this correctly. Say I have a brilliant general purpose AI model. I clone it, so I have two identical AI systems.
Oh.
I put one to work in the marketing department, crafting ad campaigns. I put the exact same AI model to work in the legal department, reviewing compliance contracts. They aren't the same employee, are they?
Not at all.
It's like having two identical twins. One twin gets a security badge to the creative studio. When it logs into the system, it inherits a mandate to be bold, a large ad spend budget, and a high tolerance for creative risk.
Yes.
The other twin gets a badge to the legal vault. When it logs in, the system checks its parent manager, and it inherits a strict mandate to go entirely by the book with zero risk tolerance. They share the same underlying silicon brain, but they inherit entirely different constraints based on where they sit in the company.
That is the core of it. The paper calls this organizational identity. An actor's identity in the workplace isn't defined by the software code it is running. It is defined by the context it inherits.
The marketing agent inherits the marketing VP's purpose and budget.
And the compliance agent inherits the general counsel's strict audit requirements.
So you don't actually manage the AI technology. You manage the organizational context that the AI is inheriting.
Which solves a massive headache for IT and management. It means that as you deploy AI across a global enterprise, you don't need to invent a separate parallel set of rules just for the technology.
Oh, because the technology simply plugs into the existing human governance structure.
Exactly. If an AI acts on behalf of a middle manager, it mathematically inherits that specific manager's data, access rights, and budget limits. It physically cannot access payroll data unless its human manager had the authority to access payroll data.
It is quite literally inheriting the manager's box.
And because the human manager retains ultimate accountability, that manager is highly incentivized to make sure the box they give their agent is incredibly well-defined.
That makes total sense.
This inheritance model is the secret to scaling autonomous execution without losing your mind, because every single agent is tethered to a specific inherited organizational reality.
This is such a radically different way to view a company. We have to stop seeing businesses as rigid machines made of interlocking cogs and predefined processes.
It is evolving into a dynamic ecosystem of human, agentic, and hybrid actors.
They are all operating within governed specifications, inheriting their authority from human managers, and figuring out the best way to execute their goals in real time.
It is a profound shift from optimizing the activities of your workers to optimizing the conditions for success. The organizations that insist on predefining every single step will simply be too slow to compete with the sheer adaptability of an agentic enterprise.
It really is the difference between managing a factory floor and governing a nation. And that is what we want to bring back to you, the listener, as we wrap up today.
Yeah.
As you go into your next team meeting or as you sit down and open up your workflow software tomorrow morning, take a step back. Ask yourself, are you still trying to design rigid processes? Are you trying to control the exact step-by-step activities of your team or your software?
Or are you ready to start designing specifications?
Right. Are you ready to govern the conditions and let the execution emerge dynamically?
It is a question every leader needs to answer.
But I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to chew on, something that really builds on this idea of organizational identity.
Okay.
If this paper is right, and an actor's identity in the workplace is defined entirely by its inherited purpose, its authority, and its constraints, rather than whether it's made of human DNA or silicon chips, at what point will our legal and cultural definitions of a coworker or an employee need a complete rewrite?
Well, yeah.
If a hybrid actor is recognized as a single unified node on the org chart, sharing a budget and a quota, when do we have to start granting formal legal or corporate rights to our hybrid and agentic partners? It is something to seriously think about the next time you delegate a task to your AI. The robotic step-by-step grind is over. It's time to hand over the canvas, define the box, and commission a masterpiece.